Welcome to Marvelous Disney, the podcast that discusses the most recent doings at one of the more dynamic divisions of the Walt Disney Company, which is, of course, Marvel Entertainment. This is entertainment writer Jim Hill and my co-host, the amazing Aaron Adams, and I are recording this week's episode on Thursday, August 25th. Okay, folks, you know the drill by now. Aaron and I are recording new episodes of this podcast on Thursdays and then dropping them on Fridays, largely because new episodes of She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, drop on Thursday mornings at 3 a.m. East Coast time. A quick question, Aaron, when did you get up to watch this one?
Normally, I'm up by about 5-ish, so Yeah, it was about 5:30 by the time I started hitting play.
Okay. I was a half hour behind you. I did it at 6, and we're only two episodes in, but I think that this new Marvel Studios limited series for Disney Plus is crushing it. Episode 2 of She-Hulk just took the ball, picked it up right where episode 1 left it off, and then ran with it. This is really ridiculously confident storytelling, which Aaron and I will talk about at length on the second half of today's show. But first, the news. And the news portion of this show is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. Before we get started here, I know this is a Marvel news podcast, but as we've talked about on recent episodes of Marvelous Disney, there's a lot going on at Warner's.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about Sandman for the hour. Damn it!
Though that said, what did we think of the animated episode that dropped this past weekend?
Well, I mean, it's either that or you spend $1 million on CGI cats, because it is a dream of a thousand cats. So most of it is just cats. So animation made a whole lot of sense there. And it's basically the Audible episode with animation over it, because it's got the Audible cast. If you'll notice, it's I believe James McAvoy is Dream for that episode. Mm-hmm. So,
very true. What I've been delighting is that so many friends who are obviously great lovers of the original Neil Gaiman graphic novel, just literally, I have no notes. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, if you wanted to open the comic books and read along with it as it's happening on the screen, like I noticed one image was reversed when he's holding the guy in the palm of his hand. Sandman was on the right side of the screen, but he was on the left on the page. And it's like, whoa, that's a huge departure from the source material there, lads.
When Zack Snyder did his Watchmen, there were a number of people who were like, you know,
it was too faithful.
That's it, exactly. Yeah. That it was almost too slavish to the graphic novel, where you're just not hearing that about Sandman. That, right. It's its own thing, but at the same time, very respectful to the source material. And, you know, I mean, again, the very fact that nobody's bitching about the casting, nobody's bitching about the production values or anything like that. And again, remember, you and I work on the internet where to bitch is to breathe. Right. And I'm just kind of startled that it's been so universally embraced.
Yeah, well, Neil Gaiman's very, very great at shutting people down in the most politely British way possible, because, you know, there was like a few people that would say, oh, this is so woke and blah-de-blah, nobody will watch this woke garbage. And Neil Gaiman's like number one in 90 countries. So I don't know what your definition of nobody is, but you might like want to peek at a dictionary. It's like very simple. It's like, hey, you're obligated to, or you're okay to have your own opinion, but when facts state you're wrong, it's okay to go back into your troll cave for a little while and rethink your argument.
Oh, I love to hear this. Though, pivoting to the main focus of the news segment today, somebody who clearly would love to be able to handle his critics with the same skill as Neil Gaiman is obviously David Zaslav, the CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt news. I just had a great idea for a sitcom. It's current CEO of Disney, it was Bob Chapek. Is that Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Zaslav and their drinking buddies at the bar. And the whole gag is they go, "What'd you try at work today?" "I told them all the actors are stupid, overpaid crybabies." "Oh, did that work?" "Not at all. Damn it." And like the whole thing is just all the things that they tried and failed. And it's like the opposite of Cheers. It's just called booze. There you go, booze. The drinking, but with the booze. And go. Okay, go ahead with the news.
Okay, well, again, I'm thinking we need to talk with somebody over at Comcast NBC Universal.
Right, yeah. You mean they won't make this at Discovery because it's scripted?
There we go. All right.
On to Mr. Zaslav.
Well, here's the thing. Mr. Zaslav has been very upfront about what he wants to eventually do with Warner Brothers Discovery, especially when it comes to DC movies. I mean, here's a quote from August 4th. "What I'm looking to do with the DC Extended Universe at Warner Brothers Discovery over the next 10 years is very similar to what Alan Horn and Bob Iger put together very effectively with Kevin Feige over at Disney." Now, I especially want to point out that Alan Horn name drop in there. Alan Horn had been the chairman of Walt Disney Studios, more recently the chief creative officer over the company, but he left after nearly 10 years on the job in December of this last year. He effectively walked out the door with Bob Iger. It was the notion of, okay, Bob's leaving. He's the guy who brought me in.
Was there a Jerry Maguire moment? Who's coming with me?
That's an interesting idea, because there were a number of folks who did make their exits.
But were they going to the same place, or were they all going their separate ways to different locations?
They were all, actually, a lot of them, it wasn't a question of we're heading down the road and setting up something new. They all went off in different directions.
So that's a lack of faith in leadership. I'd rather be anywhere else than wherever the next chucklehead's going to lead us, right?
Well, speaking of where people go to, here's the important thing to remember. Alan started Disney in 2012 and then rode herd on several billion-dollar earners, Infinity War, Endgame, and the like. Now, where this gets interesting is prior to Alan's nearly decade-long run at Disney, he previously spent 12 years at Warner Brothers, where he was largely responsible for that studio's hugely successful Harry Potter franchise. But then, just 2 months before Deathly Hallows Part 2 was released to theaters in May of 2011, by the way, it then went on to earn $1.3 billion at the worldwide box office, Alan was forced out at Warner's. And why? Well, as Alan explained to the New York Times back in 2011, "The notion of my leaving, as you know, did not come from me. I guess they wanted younger and better-looking management." Alan had made that classic Hollywood mistake. He had gotten older. Not dumber, mind you. Just
apparently
older.
Uglier, too, because they were looking for handsome as well.
There we go. But he had turned 68 the year that Warner's decided, okay, it's time for you to go. And meanwhile, Bob Iger is standing, you know, again, the Warners and Disney are both in Burbank. And, you know, Bob must have been standing right outside the door. You know, it's like, ooh, Alan, come here. Actually, that's not clear. Alan had to wait out the non-compete clause in his contract. Mm-hmm. So he didn't wind up going over to Disney till May of 2012. Anyway, so we jump back to where we are now. Alan is now 78 years old, but David Zaslav, after the last couple of months of press it so bad you can see it from space, he knew he needed a more experienced hand. So this is a guy who's dealing with the aftermath of the Warner Brothers Discovery merger, which comes on the heels of the AT&T deal, and they're trying to mitigate just $3 billion worth of debt that the studio has acquired. The deal itself and the impact of the AT&T deal, they're actually looking at trying to figure out how to write down $55 billion. So this is a guy who's dealing with a Chernobyl-sized mess, at least as far as Wall Street is concerned. Zaslav sees that Alan Horn, who's had experience as Warner, has left Disney, reaches out, and tail end of last month, July of 2022, Alan comes on board at Warner Brothers Discovery as a consultant and just basically turns to to David and says, look, nobody in the industry understands what you're doing. Nobody gets this, and you're scaring people. So you need to do something that people understand, which is why earlier this week, Warner Brothers Discovery announced that they were signing Matt Reeves, the director of The Batman. Warner signs Reeves to a multi-year first look deal. But the fact that just a day or so later, they then hired Mattson Tomlin, who was brought in to fix the script of the Batman when it developed, you know, third act problems during production. They hired him to co-write The Batman 2 with Matt Reeves. So we're back in business as usual here at Warner Brothers. We're putting sequels to the studio's highly successful superhero movies into development as quickly as possible, just like the folks over at Marvel do for Disney. Now, mind you, again, they are still dealing with that tsunami of bad publicity. In fact, this story dropped in the same window of time when word got out that Batman Caped Crusader, which is this highly anticipated animated series that Bruce Timm, J.J. Abrams, and Matt Reeves, they were developing this for HBO Max. Now, the language, at least in town, is show is not officially dead. Not yet, anyway. Batman Caped Crusader is supposedly being shopped around town, looking for a new home for the project. But again, Horn, who, remember, has decades of experience of shepherding first the Harry Potter series and then all those interconnected MCU movies, has supposedly been schooling Zaslav when it comes to how incredibly difficult, time-consuming, and expensive it is to bring one of these huge tentpole films to the market. Which brings us to the other story of this week. Warner Bros. Discovery just announced that the release date for Aquaman Lost Kingdom just got pushed back from March 17th of next year all the way to December 23rd, 2023.
Also, during an interview recently, did you see that Jason Momoa said, Ben Affleck's also in the movie as well. And he knew that he was going to get in trouble, but he just couldn't help himself. And so, what do you think?
There's a lot of people doing this lately with Warners.
Well, who are they going to send after Jason Momoa to correct him? You need, like, you know, The Rock and his buddies to be able to go up to Jason Momoa and offer a polite suggestion of, you know, it's like, who's going to tell him to shut up? You don't have anyone big enough on staff. You don't have a big enough staff to go send after Jason Momoa. There is Marvel PR team. They would just drive, the van would drive by his house and go, we tried, guys. We did everything we can. We drove by his house. We saw that he was home. And we went, yep, that's as far as we can go with this mission.
Probably very true. But interesting, the Marvel Warner parallels here. Because think about it. Original plan here was that Black Adam would arrive in theaters October 21st of this year. Shazam, Fury of the Gods, would arrive in theaters just 2 months later, on December 21st, 2022. And then 2.5 months after that, Aquaman of the Lost Kingdom would arrive in theaters on March 17th of next year. New plan is that Black Adam opens in theaters on October 21st of this year. Then, some 5 months later, after Black Adam, Shazam, Fury of the Gods, opens in theaters on March 17th, 2023. And then, as we just mentioned, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom arrives in theaters on December 23rd, 2023, 8 months after Shazam, Fury of the Gods. And supposedly in-house at Warner Discovery, this plan is known as the absence makes the heart grow fonder plan. Oh, okay. The notion is we put some distance between the DC movies and superhero film fans will be like, oh, you know, it's been 5 months. I haven't seen a DC hero. Okay, after Black Adam, I will go see Shazam. And then it's been 8 months, and I had such a good time at Shazam, I will go see the Aquaman.
Well, sequel. I mean, come on now. If you were to be an executive at Warner's, right, and you're having to make a decision on a movie that's been put in front of you, and it's like the Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix, is not the Joker that you would have in which was Jared Leto in the Justice League version, right? So you have to make a decision now. Are we sticking to that old thing? Or are we going somewhere new? They don't have a unified plan. Now, if they were Marvel had a one-track mind, build the universe. Everything is going to lend to this one thing. Whereas right now, DC is fractured, and they're doing offshoots. They've got The Batman with Robert Pattinson, and they've also got a Batman, who is Ben Affleck. And they've also got Michael Keaton brought back in a Flash movie, apparently, according to rumors, right? So you've got three Batmen in your universe.
Yep.
And now someone brings you a new script, and they go, it's Lady Gaga playing Harley Quinn in the Joker movie, and you made a lot of money last time, but it's no way connected to a Black Adam. And Black Adam is apparently, according to The Rock and rumors, going to be the central bad guy moving forward for everyone to be an antagonist against, I guess. I have no idea what the plan is. Even if they spell it out as point blank as that, I still don't know if anyone has, and they don't know what's going to make the money. Where do we go? Because we made some money over here. We made some money over there. We can't unify it. What do we do?
There was a moment when the plan was to bring out Shazam, A Fury of the Gods, on December 16th of this year. And that's the exact same day that, Avatar, The Way of Water was supposed to open in theater. And it's literally like, let me put my baby carriage out on the highway. Oh, here comes the 18-wheeler. I wonder what is going to happen.
I was purely thinking of the Loki line of ants meeting a boot. But yeah, same thing.
And the other thing, look, I get why Warner Brothers would be looking over the hill at what Disney's doing with Marvel. And it's like, I want that. I want that so bad. I mean, think about it. Just in the past calendar year, September 21st, Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings comes out. November of last year, Eternals. December, we get Spider-Man No Way Home. Yeah, produced by Sony, but still big ties to the MCU. May of this year, we get Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. And just last month, Thor, Love, and Thunder. And that's five giant superhero movies filled with effects brought to the marketplace in just 10 months' time.
That's probably, a $1 billion of production budget?
Without even breaking a sweat.
Okay, so is DC ready, or is Warner Brothers ready to throw that chunk of bling out on the gambling table today?
See, but this is the interesting thing. What Alan Horn is basically whispering in David Zaslav's ear at this point, it's like, you can't do that. Don't even try. You know, the thing of a 10-year plan is it takes 10 years to pull off. I mean, like just today, watching episode 2 of She-Hulk Attorney at Law, and the fact that we're sitting here just like, hey, it's Tim Roth back as Emil Blonsky and the Abomination. And it's like, he was last on the canvas in June of 2008, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
If you're a Warner Brothers discovery and you're trying to go up against what Marvel Studios is doing, you can't compete with that bench. Never mind about the five theatrical things that came out, the five series that were over on Disney Plus in the same year. Marvel What If, Hawkeye in November, Moon Knight in March, Ms. Marvel just wrapped up in July, and here we are, enjoying She-Hulk Attorney at Law. And evidently, Alan Horn, from all his years working on Harry Potter and all his years working at Disney, with the Marvel Universe, it's like, first of all, spread these things out because they're expensive. The promotion on these things is so hard, and you gotta hope and pray that you get the right weekend. They caught such a break when it comes to where they just move Shazam Fury of the Gods to March 17th. Because it turns out it's 1 month after Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania arrives in theaters on February 17th. And then there's 6 weeks between when Shazam Fury of the Gods is released and then Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 shows up on, I want to say, May 5th. And evidently, Horn just explained to Zavlat, like, look, Black Adam comes out on October 21st. You have 21 days to make as much money as possible, because as soon as Black Panther 2 Wakanda Forever arrives in theaters on November 11th, the steel door descends. This is a film people have been anticipating since we lost Chadwick Boseman.
What if they went out day and date against a Marvel movies, like all of them, just, Marvel's got five movies, here's our five movies, and they all come out on the exact same date, and we made it like a barroom brawl fight amongst the two companies.
Now, that's the thing, when you have shareholders, and remember, that's really what this whole thing is about, what Zaslav is doing right now. This is a guy who in every single direction is trying to do the thing that will get Wall Street in his corner, like the $90 million write-down for Batgirl. And speaking of which, the other fascinating story from the past week, this just came out yesterday. Did you see this about the funeral screenings for Batgirl?
Yeah, I'm still waiting on my Warner Brothers credentials to get in the mail. I was a key grip on that.
There we go.
Yeah, I was holding keys in my hand while it was being made at some point, I'm certain of it. So I'm going to get a plane ticket, and I'm going to go out there with some keys in my hand and my little fake badge, and I'm going to say, admit one, please, and see what happens.
What Aaron is referring to here is evidently for the cast and the crew of Batgirl, they are having screenings on the lot of the uncompleted film. In fact, that's the other thing, the two gentlemen who made Ms. Marvel for Disney.
Well, don't they have a score for it? Wasn't that the thing that got recorded anyway because it got shut down, but they already paid for it?
They slap
that sucker in there and let's get a temp score. I mean, it don't take but a minute.
Yeah, but evidently the filmmakers, you know, it's like said, look, this is not a Zack Snyder situation. This is not a Justice League where it's, you know, I mean, we still had scenes to shoot. The effects work wasn't done. So it's
well, that was true of Zack Snyder's thing because he had to have a whole bunch of money to finish it. The difference is this is going into a vault and no amount of bitching or crying will get it released because of legal.
Speaking of the vault, that's actually the best case scenario.
What are they going to do, light it on fire?
Actually, supposedly, in order to get the IRS to actually, okay, we accept that you are never going to make any revenue off of this film you've wrote down, this may be the only option, that they have to physically destroy any prints that possibly exist of footage.
Nope, I've already got a loophole.
Okay.
They can't make any money off of it, so you could have a free screening.
Interesting.
You could give it away like you was Robin Hood and let the theaters make 100% profit off of it and Warner Brothers not make a cent and still be in the legal right of that argument.
That's intriguing because but evidently they moved at speed.
Either way, I'm going to get the klaxon out real quick and sound it to get everybody's attention. Oh my goodness, that is loud. I really got to rethink that. Anyway, the klaxon for your attention is, people, you've only got a very short amount of time to get that copy out. So before they burn it, you've got the ticking clock here. Get a move on. Well,
I wonder if it's even possible at this point. Adil El Arbi, one of the two Belgian filmmakers behind Batgirl, talked about, I mean, remember, they were out of the country at a wedding when they found out that this went down. And so they literally hopped onto their Warner Brothers account. And the film elements had already been pulled out of their accounts.
All right. Well, I'm just going to say these few magic words. Raspberry Pi computer is about the size of a stick of gum and a pinhole camera and a cheap hat. And by the way, in no way do we condone piracy. It's bad. You should never, ever do it. But if you were, a good way to go about it would be with a Raspberry Pi computer, which is the size of a stick of gum, and a pinhole camera in a hat, if you were to do that. But we don't condone it. Please continue.
Okay. And just on a side note now, this might be a very good time, folks, to perhaps reach out to GLK&H to see if you could perhaps arrange legal representation ahead of time. And speaking of which, we will talk at length about that firm when we get to the second half of today's show.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I don't know if you saw the story this morning, Aaron, right out of the Hollywood Reporter, where Kate Corro, she's the sitcom vet, worked on Modern Family for ABC, as well as It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia at FX, who's directed 6 of the 9 episodes of She-Hulk, Attorney at Law. And yes, I'm saying season 1 because I want there to be a season 2.
Wait a minute. No, it's not. It's not She-Hulk, Attorney at Law. It's She-Hulk, Attorney for Hire at the moment. They switched the title in episode 2.
Did they really?
Yeah,
damn
yeah.
It, I missed that.
It starts off with She-Hulk Attorney at Law, and then when she gets fired from her job, it switches to She-Hulk Attorney for Hire. And so now I'm wondering if we're going to have a new name every episode gag, because that'd be fun.
That would be fun. Damn it. I got to start wearing my glasses while I watch these things. Anyway, Kate talked about how she knew She-Hulk, in spite of all the stuff we talked about previously on the show, how they had some problems early on, settling on just the right tone for this half-hour legal procedural workplace comedy. But she knew from the moment that Mark Ruffalo and Tatiana Mansley got together and said that it was going to work. You can't direct chemistry. And I knew from that the whole opening episode was going to work because they brought this playfulness out in each other. That there was a magical moment that made me think, this series is going to work. And I mentioned at the top of today's episode how confident and muscular episode 2 of She-Hulk was. Very funny, but oddly enough, didn't kid around. I mean, just moved right into the next phase of this story. What are your thoughts here, Aaron? What did you like about episode 2?
Well, first, I'm going to just say the one thing I didn't like about it. It was short. It was so short, it was like almost one of them Groot episodes. Uh-huh. It was by the time I was getting into it, the credits were rolling. I'll tell you, I had to go back and actually do a little bit of math. You had a recap of episode 1 up until a minute and 40. Uh-huh. And then you actually had content until 22 minutes and 58 seconds.
Okay.
And that's 21 minutes and 18 seconds of content.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, my beef right now is, man, is it short. I will go back on my statement of episode 1. This does feel episodic. They are treating this very, very episodically. Mm-hmm. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
A complete little mini story right there that will lead us into the next little mini story. And also, we've had an Easter egg, a little mid-trailer credits button in each of the two episodes so far.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I think that Marvel is like, hey, if we're going to have fun, you know, that's usually where we place an extra joke.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is going to be a funny show, then let's just let that be a thing where we can put a thing at the end of the show. Wonderful. We've trained them for it. And now they're disappointed if we don't do it. As far as the actual episode, I still think it's very, very funny. The Hulk, the World War Hulk was trending on Twitter early this morning. Did that ruin anything?
I have to admit, I admired the skill in which he was moved off canvas.
Right, yeah. I mean, at the very end, without really saying a word about it, just on the spaceship and gone, and everyone in the world knows what that's going to lead to. Well, they hope they know what that's going to lead to, right?
Yeah.
So I think all of it has just been really, really fun. I just wish that there was a little bit more of it.
But if what you've noticed holds, if we have just really 21 minutes of new material out of a 31-minute long show, We have 9 episodes of this coming. All right, so if I work the math, at the end of the first season, we will have 189 minutes worth of She-Hulk goodness. That's over 3 hours.
That's one Infinity War, Buster.
That's it, exactly. This is why, Nancy, I have a friend, Angela Ragno, who flat out refuses when a streaming service does this. It's like, yeah, I'll wait till all of the episodes are there, and then I'll watch it. Because this sort of thing, getting it parceled out to me like a food pellet. Mm-hmm. No, I want the whole meal. I want the banquet all at once. So I'll wait. I'll wait the 9 weeks.
Well, it's an issue of if we're going to be looking at the possibility of a 16 or 18 episodes of Daredevil Reborn, and if those happen to be closer to 45 minutes to an hour long, mm-hmm. You know, that is a huge, massive, wonderful, glorious pile of Daredevil. Mm-hmm. But then you look over at She-Hulk and you're like, yeah, we only got 3 hours here, but we got 9 hours of Daredevil. Mm-hmm. And I don't want it to be lopsided to a new character. I mean, I know they're testing the waters. This is the first time out, so they have to be a little bit on the tentative side.
Yeah, remember, I mean, this is their first sitcom. It's a legal procedure. It's also a workplace comedy, which I think, as we mentioned, the DC show that they did with Vanessa Hudgens that didn't fly, you know, so mm-hmm. It's the notion of, okay, this didn't work just recently, so we have to approach this with some caution. It's not just great production values, good writing. The casting has been so much fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mark Lynn Baker coming in is Jennifer's dad.
That's Cousin Larry from Perfect Strangers?
Perfect Strangers, yes. But Mark Lynn Baker can do the comedy easily, but what I loved was the dad, and I need you to help me with something in the garage. And him being an actual dad is like, everything okay? Is it, you know, and then, you know, kept asking, but is everything okay? And that wonderful scene there with Mansley and, you know, him trying to comfort his daughter. It's like, look, you're not the first Hulk in the family. Mm-hmm. You know, and more to the point, you didn't destroy a city. I mean, so there's that. You know, I mean, just it was a great scene, well played. On the other hand, Stephen Coulter as Holden Holloway, Jennifer's new boss. Ooh, we have our anti-hero, I think. Correct?
Well, what about Titania? Is that mm-hmm. Didn't we make a big deal that she was supposed to be the big bad for the season? We've only got to see her get a table thrown at her once in episode one. That surely cannot be her only appearance.
Well, did you catch the whole backstory there that she's a superpowered social influencer who was upset because of something that was happening just across the way in traffic court?
Yeah, I mean, you got to have more of that, right?
Oh, no, definitely, definitely. But the boss, just from the way he recruited her and meeting her in the lobby and, oh, by the way, we're going to need you to be She-Hulk.
By the way, she is a horrible negotiator on a new job. Like, doesn't ask how much I'm going to be making or anything like that. No health, dental benefits, anything. Except I get to pick my own paralegal. Hooray.
I get what you're saying. But also, remember the scene with Jennifer and Holden in his office when here's your first case and you need to go represent Emil Blonsky, who's looking to be let out of jail. And then I can't do it. He tried to kill my cousin. It's a conflict of interest. And it's like, doesn't matter.
Right.
You're going to work here at this L.A.-based law firm, and we do what we do. We deal with bad people, mm-hmm. you know, and help them get out. So I love how they've set up this world. And you and I have talked at length about, well, how is this actually going to work? This whole Kevin Feige stories start in movies and then go to the shows and then go back to the movies. And what did you think when, you know, the tag of the show, you know, Holden, you know, she says, I'll take the case. And it's a slam dunk. And it's like, you might want to turn on the television. And here's the footage that's leaked from the cage match between Wong and the Abomination that we saw in Shang-Chi last August.
Right.
I love that what Kevin talked about in theory is now really happening, that these rich worlds are bleeding over, and the stories that have been established in one place are continuing right on here in She-Hulk Attorney at Law.
You know, one thing that I think makes this more possible for them to do and a bit easier to do It was back in ye olden day of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC. You had a very, very strict schedule of it, started at whatever point through the fall and then, you know, relaunched the second half of the season in spring or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you had these little very specific gaps. And, you know when your movies are coming out, but when you're making stuff, you know, years ahead of time, it's really mm-hmm. hard to make sure those things are going to line up perfectly. Whereas right now, She-Hulk is a singular thing that could land anywhere on the calendar and nobody would know the difference between February and October. If it was deemed correct story-wise to put it there now, then they will. And I think that that's one of the benefits right now of these singular series at the moment. Yeah, we might get a Moon Knight 2, but at the moment it's singular because it's only its first season and it has the ability to land anywhere without influencing anything around it. And can be its own thing and connect to any other thing in any way that it chooses to. So they've got that flexibility just because they're not stuck to, it has to connect to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on April 12th, 2024, because that's a hell of a bullseye.
I have to say that when I was watching the scene where Jennifer goes to the Supermax and is interviewing Emil in his cell, and he mentions that my seven friends who I've met through the prison pen pal system and how, you know, we're looking to relaunch our lives on a large piece of land. Tell me your ears, you know, because you've talked about Thunderbolts, mm-hmm. which again, they've announced.
No, that's not a Thunderbolts gag that he's referencing there.
Are you sure?
Yes, Emil he's assembling himself a harem. He's got seven different wives, and he's going to do the somewhere at a little piece of land where marrying many people is not a crime. And that's what he's going to go to. And he's going to have a little tent, and he's going to raise some goats in a field far off by the mountain somewhere, and nobody will ever find him.
I'm thinking at the end of Phase 5 of the MCU, which, by the way, we have a date on July 26, 2024, that perhaps it will be another end to that story. But again, folks, we have to wait 23 months before we find out.
All right. For all of us marvelous Disney listeners, this is now the time to place your bets. Either you go with Aaron, who believes that Emil has himself a harem and a herd of goats in the mountains, or Jim's crazy wackadoo idea that he's talking about the Thunderbolts.
Before we get ourselves in trouble, I think it's time to close shop.
Well, no, wait, we got to talk about, we got to drop the Easter eggs real quick.
Oh, yes. My apologies. Yeah.
Well, first off, I just want to say that if I were to ever join a workplace, I would love it if a new colleague came up to me with a map of the best bathroom to poop in. I thought that was the funniest gag of the show. And I'm like, man, I wish I would have had someone tell me the best place to poop on day one.
For a workplace comedy to go there, it felt right, again, is probably the whole point of the best bathroom to poop in. Yep. Anyway, so, going on.
That wasn't actually an Easter egg. That was just a lovely little gag.
That you brought it up, yes. Okay.
The Easter egg at 5 minutes and 58 seconds, she's on a laptop looking for a new place to get a job at. And one that I thought was odd that was an ad in the upper right corner for Iron Man 3s, which apparently are shoes kind of like Air Jordans or something. I thought that was kind of a clever way to pay homage to Tony Stark by the material capitalistic world of making sneakers in his name. But underneath that were two headlines that I wish you would have clicked the link on, because the first headline that she should have clicked on said, "Man fights with metal claws in bar brawl." I wonder who they're talking about, Jim.
Oh dear. Okay.
I could never imagine. I wish you would have clicked on the link to see some little Canadian dude in a yellow and black spandex. I don't know. Anyway, I want to truly believe that little nugget will never get paid off in any way, shape, or form. In any meaningful way. I don't expect the next Wolverine movie to start with him getting into a fight in a bar with metal claws and a reporter going, "Hey, I'm going to write a story about this and send it in to the New York Post, see what happens." I think they're just dropping in Easter eggs. But if they're allowed to do that, then somewhere Kevin Feige's given his blessing that mutants exist out there some way, somehow. We just don't know about it yet. And we've obviously had the Miss Marvel mutation connection there. So
I really think that Feige has said, let there be mutants.
I love the way you're thinking here. And more than, again, I'm kicking myself that I missed that in the earlier gag you mentioned.
Now, the more important thing that is directly underneath that headline that I wish you would have clicked on this as well so we could have gotten a big old picture of it. Because, you know, headlines are great with big, huge, giant pictures. But the headline says, why there is a giant statue of a man sticking out of the ocean.
Oh, finally.
Yes.
Finally.
Yeah. Right. Someone out there is listening to the fans going, hey, why is nobody acknowledging this?
Oh, okay. I can sleep easier now. I mean, the Eternals came out in November. And again, this has bugged me.
Yeah.
So I love that it's acknowledged, even in passing, even in a background gag. So.
Yeah. Yeah. At least it's getting out there. You don't have to actually have someone chatting about it for 5 minutes on screen. And, you know, same thing with my complaint about Jennifer not being a very good negotiator. I really don't need her to sit down and have a 5-minute negotiation on a contract. But, you know, it's just the idea of that's all she asked for was a paralegal and no other questions. Jeez. OK, you should at least cut to like 10 minutes later after, you know, they're both sweating. OK, fine. You get it. Oh, thank you. Handshake, you know, something.
Well, I mean, face it, at least when it comes to being a She-Hulk and Jennifer Walters, she is learning as she's going. And there was that lovely little bit at the front of the show where her boss, the district attorney, it's like, can you go back to being Jennifer? And, you know, she's been knocking back drinks. And that lovely thing of just sort of the throwaway line of, oh, whoa, different metabolism.
That is a very funny gag to throw in there.
That was fun. That was fun.
Alrighty.
Okay, Aaron, let's bring this week's episode to a close. So where can folks find you on social media?
First you go to Twitter, then you tap in the @AzaProd, AzaProd. And I just want everyone to know I have completely given up on that whole given my 110% thing. I am burned out. I've switched to a milk scale. I now give 4% and people go, whoa, 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 can you cut it back to 2%? And then that's where we're all okay. So if life is too demanding for you, switch to the milk scale. That's what Aaron would do.
Wow. Dairy-related jokes. Okay.
If you're lactose intolerant, spit the joke out.
There we go. All right. Well, social media here. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media and over on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. Also want to point out that there's a couple of other podcasts here at the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. We have Disney Dish, which I do with Len Testa. We also have Fine Tuning that I do with Drew Taylor. We have also Looking at Lucasfilm that I do with Brian Gaughan. If you could do Aaron and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend Marvelous Disney, that would be very helpful. Likewise, if you really, really, really like what you heard here today, if you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be helpful too. That will do it for this week. So thanks for listening, folks, and we'll be back soon.